Market bulls are limping into the end of the third quarter as risk is repriced for a land of higher yields and battered supply chains. Will sentiment improve in October, though? Let's check in with Thematica Research Chief Macro Strategist Lenore Hawkins. Lenore, good to see you this morning. Hey, listen, you heard us talking before we went into break. I'm getting a lot of guff, let's just say, from my more bearish take on the economy and stocks. But you know, should I not care about supply chain bottlenecks and inflation? Should you just jump into this market hand over fist?
Well, I'm with you on that the supply chain problems are persisting. I'm absolutely with you that there are some real fundamental problems. But when we start talking about inflation really sticking for the long run and not being transitory, and by transitory, I'm not saying this is like a quarter or just two quarters. I think that's not really taking in the full picture. So first off, if we look at what actually is going on with inflation, over the past year, we've had 9 months where core CPI averaged all of 0.12% month over month. For 3 months, it averaged 0.85. Now, that's the big inflation story. That's not crazy inflation. And the data out of Europe this week has been really pretty muted. Now, the real problem here is to get inflation that's really going to stick, you need to have wage increases break above the prevailing inflation rate to generate real income and spending power that's really going to be able to perpetuate an inflation cycle. And what we're actually seeing here is that, in fact, unit labor costs, which is productivity adjusted for labor compensation, that has about an 80% correlation with headline inflation and an 82% correlation with core CPI. That's the real inflation measure. Q2, that's the latest recorder, the year-over-year pace, it retreated from 2.1 in Q1 to below 0.2. So we're seeing below 0.2% growth in the thing that really you need to get sustained inflation. That doesn't mean we're not going to see these price shocks. Like you're saying, those supply chains, I mean, a year ago, we were talking about oil at below zero a barrel. So yeah, we're going to see all kinds of crazy price problems. We've got, what is it, over 60 container ships stuck outside the ports in the U.S., but they're going to get unloaded sometime. All those people in the labor market who are kind of on the sidelines, you know, we've got angst in the labor market, they're going to get jobs. It's not a permanent change.
So what about all these companies? I'm continuing to play the role of Brian Sozzi here. Yeah. What about all these companies that are coming out and warning now and saying that because of these supply chain problems, they're not going to be able to meet their numbers? Or in the case of Bed Bath & Beyond, it's actually more on the demand side that the foot traffic is not there. So are these all just temporary bumps and stocks are just going to continue to rally once all of these issues are worked out?
Well, we've got a market price for perfection. The cyclically adjusted PE ratio is at 38.3. Now that's really high on a historical basis. So that means that stocks are priced for a lot of growth going forward. And there's a lot to get through. You've got a market priced to perfection and you've got an economy that is decidedly not dealing with perfection. We've got those supply chain problems. That's going to take time to work out. You've also got the labor market, where we've got a shift undergoing with people deciding, God, how do they really want to live? And that's going to take some time to work out. You've got these pricing pressures that are going to take time to work out. All of that put together on top of what's going on in Capitol Hill, we've got real mixed messages coming out of Capitol Hill. You've got, on the one hand, the Fed saying, ooh, we're starting to get nervous. We're thinking about tapering. And all that tapering really means, let me put this into perspective, is you're going to reduce the amount of support that you're giving the economy. So we're talking about tapering. And then on the other hand, you've got the federal government that's arguing, the Democrats arguing to do a spending bill that's about 20% of GDP. That's what you do when you want to boost the economy. How do we reconcile those two things?
Lenore, maybe you can reconcile this debate Julie and I have been having really all year long. Sure, if we get this infrastructure package, might be great. But how do we pay for it? And really, how to pay for it probably is higher taxes on corporations and individuals. What is the economic impact if that happens?
Exactly. So on the one hand, we're talking about tapering. We want to reduce the support. Then we want to spend a bunch of money because we want to boost the economy. but then we're going to put taxes on, which is also brakes on the economy. Now, figuring out how all of this is actually going to pan out, kind of impossible right now, because we're looking at, well, is it zero stimulus or is it 4.5 trillion in stimulus? If it is the higher number, or if it's closer to that, what kind of taxes are we dealing with? If we don't get the taxes, if they don't increase taxes, then that means more borrowing, and that eventually has to matter to yields.
So higher taxes are bad. I mean, the way you think about it from an economic standpoint, higher taxes in an economy trying to recover from pandemic, you don't want to see higher taxes, right? Yeah.
Well, what do we do when we want to stop a behavior? We don't like people smoking, put a tax on it. We don't like soft drink, put a tax on it. So if you don't like people generating income, put a tax on it.
Oh, come on. Give me a break. That's not the only reason that you have taxes as a disincentive
no.
for something. Come on. Sorry. My annoyance is with my co-anchor here who just like has a blanket taxes are bad kind of attitude.
Well, it's not. We don't tax income to not generate it. But it's disingenuous to say that we know taxing a thing reduces the thing. So if we tax income generation, then you're reducing income generation.
Right. But the idea, hopefully, is that the growth that you engender by what you're spending the taxes on will more than outpace, not just in the short term, but in the longer term,
yeah.
any short term hit that someone is taking from that a company is taking from taxes.
That's the idea.
It
is, absolutely. But that's not what we've seen happening. We've seen that as government spends more and borrows more, each dollar of government spending is resulting in less than a dollar of GDP growth. We're seeing that in the U.S. and we're seeing that massively in China. It used to be for China and for the U.S. that you could borrow a dollar and that would generate more than a dollar of GDP. That's a great idea. That works for a company, that works for a country. What we're seeing now is each dollar that is borrowed is resulting in significantly less, and every incremental more amount of borrowing is resulting in smaller and smaller increases to GDP, and that's not good for anybody.
I think Julie's mad at me, Lenore. It's okay. We'll take it offline. You know, I appreciate the discussion. we'll leave it there. Tomatica Research Chief Macro Strategist Lenore Hawkins. Good to see you. Have a great rest of the week.